Welcome to Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Robert.
And I'm Ruth Ann.
We'll be your host for the next hour. In this show, we're going to have a discussion about fear. You know, fear is very commonplace, unfortunately, in today's life, in today's society, and all around us. And it's really hard to keep yourself protected from that in a way.
Well, we've got everything from natural disasters to man-made disasters, and we've got plenty of those.
Natural man-made disasters.
Which is most of the problem. Yeah. I mean, you go from politics to you go, you know, everywhere you
it's
go.
Personal lives.
You know, it seems
personal.
Like there's so much to be afraid of. And so we wanted to talk about fear and how not to buy into it, how not to live a fear-based life. And we wanted to talk about, you know, how it's affecting us and what we can do so that we can make decisions that aren't based on what we're afraid of and so that we can stay positive. You know, part of this change that's been coming and that's still to come is, you know, is not living in fear anymore. And so we have a guest on today, Rachel Angel, who is not only a dear friend of mine, but she has a master's in counseling, and she deals with students and adults, and she deals with, you know, with getting people past their fears. And so she's joining us tonight, and we're very happy to have you with us, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to meet you. You know, Ruth Ann's told me quite a bit about you and you know, with your, you know, the counseling that you are doing. And you also kind of, you know, she told me that you have, you're also into, I guess, metaphysics, for
that
lack of a better word.
Basically,
or, you know,
a well-rounded person.
Well-rounded person, which
so,
is, that's our title.
What
our
a better show for you to be on than Well-Rounded Corners.
There you go.
Yeah. What a nice segue.
Yeah, there we go. If you
I am interested in kind of looking at things from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, that's the
and I think that there's something to be said for, you know, not just the Western way of looking at things, but also the Eastern way of looking at things and kind of figuring out what works for you and what doesn't.
Yeah, that's a good that's a good way to be, I think.
Yes,
I mean,
it is. If you could start with just telling us a bit about yourself, that'd help our listeners, and that way we could, you know, we've got so much to talk about tonight, and as I said, we're just so happy to have you. If you could just start by just, you know, introducing yourself a little bit.
Sure. Well, I'm Rachel, and I currently live in Virginia, and I am the youngest of 11 children, and that has been a source of a lot of learning for me, learning about birth order and kind of how I fit in the family was kind of my first task. And I sort of came late to this career. I went to a lot of things that I really loved to do, but I didn't have a real good direction. And I kind of floated around a little bit for a few years and got married and was a stay-at-home mom for a few years and fortunately was in an abusive marriage and met some people that kind of gave me the strength and courage to think about that maybe I was worth more than the life that I was living. And I got into counseling, and I found a fabulous therapist. And, you know, if I could be a tenth of the therapist that she is, that would just be fantastic. I credit her with so much of my growth and development. And I found out that I liked being happy way more than I liked being unhappy.
Wonderful.
So that kind of led me to the road that I took to help other people kind of find their own growth. And that's all counseling's about. It's helping people grow and become better parts of themselves than they were before. That's all it is.
Well, that I am just so happy we have you, because not only all the backgrounds you've told us, there's so much more to you as well. As I said, you're so well balanced. Tell us a little bit about all the other things that you're interested in and that you enjoy. I mean, as hobbies or passions or whatever you would want to call them.
Well, I also dabble in astrology quite a bit, in numerology, and I kind of like that sort of thing. I sort of like looking at people as multi-layered. You know, I won't go so far as to call them onions, because people usually smell better than that. But I do think that people are very complex, and I like all the tools I can think of to sort of figure them out. And it's just very humbling to me, because the more people I meet and the more situations that I encounter, the more I realize I don't know. And the more training I try to get and kind of figure out my niche. And right now my niche looks like it's in grief and loss counseling. So I do a lot of helping people get through life transitions such as divorce and death, but also moving and big changes, empty nesting and things like that. And I really, really enjoy talking to people in those kind of milestone areas of their life because it feels really big and overwhelming. And I've been at those places where they just felt so big and overwhelming that I couldn't step back and realize that it was just one more day, just one more step. So that is really rewarding to help people when you've been through it yourself, I think.
That's for
and
sure.
Other than that, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's for sure. When you've been through it yourself, it gives you the perspective. And not only that, but your clients are going to know that you do understand.
Well, it gives you some authority, and credentials on that subject. I mean, because when it comes to a counselor, you can have diplomas on your wall, but in terms of you can look at them and say, well, but does this person really know where I'm coming from? And if you've been through these things yourself, then it really means more than any diploma could ever really, in my viewpoint.
And back to the numerology and astrology, that's another whole show she could join.
Well,
us
it
for.
Is, yeah.
Well, one thing you said, Rachel, that I think is exactly, and you can tell us what you think on this with. Society changing and with people becoming more open to metaphysical topics, to astrology. I mean, let's face it, 20 years ago, if you had a radio show on astrology, who would have broadcast that? Now it's all over.
It's the woo-woo.
It's the woo-woo stuff. Yeah.
And the nice thing is that in my view is that the more tools we have and the more open-minded we are, and from what you're describing, and I know you personally, that your clients are going to have someone who can talk to them about any subject that they need to talk about. And I think that's a real gift that you bring. And I think that, that's a big
deal. Yeah, I would love it if a counselor could, not only, engage in, let's say, cognitive behavior therapy or something like that, but also, draw a complete chart for me and look at do a numerology study on me. Talk about some really deep self-analysis. I mean, that's right. That's pretty kind of reminds me a little bit about one of our previous shows with the reverse speech. It's using more tools than you have at your than just a traditional therapist would have at their disposal.
Yes, you'll have to, if you haven't, you'll have to listen to that show, Rachel. He uses he uses that in counseling and in his therapy. Sessions.
Reverse speech, it was amazing.
It apparently, from what I heard, what he played, things came up that were things that they wouldn't have said outright, but what was the key to helping them heal. So
absolutely. Even therapies like EMDR, they have been so controversial in the past, but so immensely helpful for certain people. And I think that you have to be open-minded as a therapist. If you're going into it and you're saying 2 and 2 always equals 4, you're in the wrong field.
Right.
You're not going to succeed because people are far too complex.
Yes.
To put in a little box, even one that seems like it should work every time.
Yes.
The third time, it's not going to work, So right. I think that's
well,
been the greatest
if
thing.
If 2 and 2 always equaled 4, we'd have no therapists, no need for therapists.
Well, I work on servers and computers for a living, and I mean, even they're not all the same, and even those you can't.
Right.
And this is a machine. If why would we think that approach would work with a human? I mean, that's
right. I think that's one of the reasons that, it's not what the show's about tonight, but I'd love to at some point talk about, why people don't get into counseling and why people when they really need it or could benefit from it are so resistant to it. And I think one of the reasons they are is because they really just feel like, it's so easy that they can do it themselves and that we're just kind of taking money for it as in a kind of come on in, and sit down and talk to me for 15 minutes. And it's more about, a therapist nowadays should be working with a client to help them create a plan.
Yes.
And it is very much a collaborative effort. I'm not the expert. You're the expert on your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I can help you with some tools that I've learned. You know, and that's really all it is. It doesn't have to be so scary.
You're right, right.
That's a good topic.
And you said something that I think is key to you being able to help and to them being able to participate, that no matter what training any healing profession, any profession has, the client or the patient or the whoever it may be is the expert on his or her life.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So, sometimes I've caught myself saying, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would so-and-so do that? And then I have to go, wait a minute. I didn't get here. I didn't get to where we are the same way that person got here. To them, it may make
right.
sense. And it may not be healthy, but it may make sense. So,
and I wish people would do that with every professional in their life. You know, I wish they would question their doctors that way too, because really, if it holds up under scrutiny, then it's right for you.
Yeah,
right.
the whole that, that's
why we take anybody.
that's a whole other show there too.
Yes, we could talk for 3 or 4 hours, and I have it length before.
No joke.
The results of speaking up to your doctor, but anyway.
Yeah, that's
right.
But
we try not to get, you know, it's funny in the show, we have a kind of a, I don't think we've ever spoken on, well, yeah, I think we have spoken about it in the show. We have a no religion, no politics rule, and that we don't,
uh-huh.
we try not to address those topics. I think we'll have to add a no doctors rule to it. And no, don't get me wrong. I mean, doctors are great. It's one of those fields in our life where there's so much turbulence that I, you know,
yes.
and oftentimes they don't listen to us. And
but you know, that's true. But you know what?
Let's not say there's not good doctors.
And
out
I
there,
have but. To say that even in, excuse me, even in where we live in Alabama, I have to say that the openness to energy therapies like Reiki, the openness to Chinese medicine, excuse me, chiropractic even, all different alternative medicine, you know, techniques that 10 years ago, 15 years ago would have been laughed right out of town or seen as
right.
quacks. Or, and now, you know, it is, people have a more of an open mind. And I think some doctors and some therapists, you know, I remember when I was in therapy, I was very lucky to have a therapist who, while the rules may say, oh, you don't need to hug your clients or whatever, that is what I needed. And that hug
right.
healed me. Now, does that mean
yes.
that everyone needs to go, that's going to work for everyone? No.
No.
But
right.
it's the being
exactly.
open, you know, to what does this client, what would help this client? And so, you know. And that goes with, you know, basically what our topic is tonight, too, is working with all the fears. And we were talking about this topic. Well, it's kind of obvious why. I mean, look around us, you know, everywhere you go, people are trying not to be scared or are scared.
Yeah. I mean, you know, fear is obviously part of what we, you know, it's a survival tool in one
mm-hmm.
sense.
Yeah.
And also, too, it. You know, it's around us in a lot of both legitimate and unnecessary ways. And it just seems like we have a culture of fear in a lot of ways now. And I wanted to kind of, you know, first, I mean, we talked about, you know, asking about this topic. And, you know, I think a good place to start would be what are the most common type fears that you run across? Like, I mean, in a very over general sense, like what
mm-hmm,
do you
mm-hmm.
see most?
Well, I think you said a really key point there. You said some of the fears are really beneficial. And I think that we have been given a gift of fear. And actually, there's a book called The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker that I would encourage every parent to get. It's a really great book about child safety, because that's all we hear about in the media. And it can be really overwhelming for new parents, especially if they just listen. But we also have this whole sort of irrational fears that kind of can consume us, and they don't really have a basis in fact. And it's the distinguishing between whether this is a healthy fear that I need to pay attention to, or if this is a fear that is leading me to be unhealthy and obsessive, and it doesn't have any sort of logical basis, any rational basis. First of all, you have to be able to distinguish between those. And, you know, in counseling, we talk about a lot about needs. And there was a fellow called Abraham Maslow who pioneered this sort of hierarchy of needs, which is fabulous. And if you're not familiar with it,
that is,
you can just Google it. but the basis of the hierarchy of needs is that there's five separate tiers. And that if you are in the bottom tier, the basis of every human need is survival.
Yes, sure.
And in survival, you're just afraid you're not going to get the basics. You don't really have the luxury of looking for anything more. Safety is a survival mode. Health is a survival mode. Having enough to eat or drink are survival modes. And everywhere all over the world, we see that when people are put into these survival situations, that kicks up. They're not thinking about whether they have the latest handbag or whether their kids are in a charter school. They're thinking, do I have clean water? Do I have access to bathrooms? Do I have enough to put on the table for my kid?
Right.
You know, do I have a safe place to live? Those are all very real needs that we have, but they lead to a certain sort of survival mentality that a lot of people live in all their lives.
And
they never
yeah.
realize that they're there.
And nowadays, that is what's being, that's why when I see from the news and really, it is those basic survival needs that are being threatened. For instance, you know, natural disaster, that's scary because, you know, we might not be alive if that happens. So that's a logical fear.
Well,
the
pyramid of needs that you mentioned, I assume, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, but it does that mean like at the base when you have that survival field, is that the fear that's going to elicit the most response or elicit the most protection?
It is
the lower you are on that pyramid, the lower you are on that pyramid, you're going to get a higher response of fear, sort of, right?
It's almost to the, how can I explain it? It's almost like the higher you go on the pyramid, the more self-actualized that you are.
Yes.
The more you can look at being altruistic, making decisions for the greater good, mm-hmm. and doing things that really make a mark. When you're in survival, it is the only thing you're thinking about. You're consumed with it to the point where you're not thinking about anything else. And, you know, some people would say, yeah, there's a lot of natural disasters and stuff. That would be a logical fear if we had an earthquake here and all of a sudden I had to worry about, do I have enough to eat or drink? But unfortunately, people who are stable still have the survival mentality so ingrained in them that they never move past it. They're
yes.
constantly thinking about, what do I need to do to survive? How do I need to? And it becomes a fear of someday I might not have enough.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with what's really happening. It's more about what's in their mind. Does that make any sense? I think people that went through the depression kind of never got out of that. They would do things like save aluminum foil and wash it over and over again, or wash in their bath water. You know, and they did that constantly throughout their life because they had experienced it. So for them, it was real, even though it wasn't anymore.
Right.
Well, let me just to ask you something on that. Because here's the thing, like someone being afraid of taking the escalator, for example, I'm just making something up. This is
yes. uh-huh.
Okay. That is one of those things that like you could live a normal life probably without ever getting on an escalator.
Yes.
In fact, if you take the stairs, if you take the stairs, you'll probably be healthier.
You'll be healthier. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's one
of
the So that's one of those fears that you could technically do without. Now, in the case of let's say being afraid of running out of food or whatever, I mean it's a necessity that we have to eat. So how does that? You see where I'm like? I mean, I hope you know. Like I'm saying.
No. I see what you're saying. Absolutely, yeah. I do see what you're saying. But we're assuming that. Okay, I would never tell someone this is an irrational fear when they have, you know, one package of pasta in their cupboard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But where we see it happening the most is people who have plenty, who have their needs met, and who for the foreseeable future know that their needs will be met, who are consumed by the fact that at some point something might happen so that they don't have their needs met. What if? It's this constant what if. What if we have a natural disaster? Well, we might. You know, is there anything you can do right now to make that not happen? No. So why are you living in a constant state of fear of, it's like the people who, I don't know if you've ever seen this show, Hoarders, but actually one of my brothers is a hoarder. And he has about 3 years worth of canned goods in his garage. And it's only for that eventuality of what if. What if someday our money's not good, or we have a natural disaster? That's when it crosses the line into irrationality. It's not a true fear anymore.
So you said he had 3 years of food. What if, because, you know, what if somebody had, let's say, a couple months of food? I'm not trying to nitpick or put these things in really, fine details here, but just.
What's the difference between prepared and obsessed?
Would you call a hoarder someone who had a month of food on hand? Or
no,
would,
no. Okay. Oh, no, not at all. And,
but yeah, 3 years.
If,
yeah, I guess in 3 years, if you can't start a farm or something, you know, you're probably.
Well, and the thing is, he has no intention of eating it or going through it. It's just for the what if. It's for the someday. It's for the I'm scared
anxiety.
Of.
It's
yes,
a pulse.
You know, it's crossed the line into anxiety.
I see this. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't. I see this in people who have had starvation or, I know for myself. When I was little, there wasn't much food sometimes, seriously, just not much.
Right.
And there is, if I were not as healthy, I say that with a laugh, but as healthy emotionally as I am at this point in my life, it would be very easy for me to go, oh my God, I remember when I was little and I was a kid and we didn't have food and I don't want my kids to be that way. So we need to put back more and more and more and more. And yes. There is an anxiety response there. And I see that in women who eat a lot. Sometimes it's,
I do too.
You know,
and you know,
what if it's
my,
not
my
here?
Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my dad actually was a depression era baby. He was in his 50s when he had me. And he didn't have me. My mom did. I just want to clarify that. But, you know, he was one of those clean your plate because you just never know. And that's how it manifested in him, this sort of, oh, what if one day I don't have that food? I've got to feed everybody way more than they really need. So that is an example of how a real life event can lead to a little bit of irrationality there. On the other hand, my dad wasn't going to stockpile 10 years of food against that day either.
Yeah.
So I think that it can be, and one of the things is like, if that's good for your family that you, you know, go and you shop in bulk and you have, you know, 3 months worth of meals, then go for it. I think that's great. If you can not get to the point where you say, oh, we can't eat that because what if, you know, that's where I would start to worry.
Well, something just sort of clicked in me when you said 1 month or 3 months, because, you know, we try to keep some back too. And I got to thinking, not even really a month, but I got to thinking about it. You know, what you said though, you said if 3 years, for example, I guess there's really no way to justify that, because in a way, in terms of, and when I mean that in terms of not being a compulsion or whatever, because if you had 3 months, for example, that, and let's say,
that's reasonable.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's say there was a situation where there was never going to be stable civilization again. 3 months is probably enough time to figure out something else. But but 3 years, I mean, you may not even be in place at the same place.
Well, not only would it be good anymore. I mean, you wouldn't be able to eat that food.
But logically, it would mostly expire before you could.
Well, right,
you'd
have to really
so
eat the first
I think it would be a matter of, you know, what makes sense and what takes over your
Yeah.
life. And that's what,
Yes.
That's a good
I'm
point.
seeing
That's a good
around
point.
me. I mean, I have seen and I'm not going to talk politics, but the debt issue. I mean, we're not getting into the pros and cons, and well, it's all cons, but anyway. But I have seen thousands and, well, actually tens of thousands of posts about what would happen, what wouldn't happen, what, and these are the same. These people are absolutely obsessed. Now, is there a reason to be obsessed? I mean, to be worried? Of course.
Yeah.
There are, but
Well,
it's the, well, we won't
it's
get into
no, I
that,
just say I think it's relative though. I mean,
but
because
it's the obsession I see that we this is just, I must talk about it all day long.
yeah.
And it's just,
Right.
really,
And
we're
not only
addicts.
that,
It's the job.
not only that, I've got to get everybody else on board too. So if
Yes.
you don't have a Berkey to, which is a water filtration system
Yep.
to filter all of your water, then you're a little bit, you're not as enlightened as me because you poor thing, you still think we're going to have drinking water in a year, So
Right.
it gets to that point where, and that's where it becomes irrational. It's not a true fear anymore. It's just anxiety.
Yeah, that's the I hear that too. You know, I mean,
Yes.
I participate in some online groups, and I've there's people that yeah, they just sort of go nuts, in my opinion, on things like that. I mean, yes, is it safe? Is it a good idea to have some stuff stored? Absolutely. Is it a good idea to have, ways to have clean water or something? Sure, but yeah, you can. I mean, if you're spending, your life savings on water purification systems and stuff, then I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to. I mean, the Berkey, I've heard of that. I'm sure it's great. I don't have one, but at the same time, I mean, how much really can it? You can prepare, over prepare, I guess, and then you end up.
Well, it's the question of how much mental energy you are
Yeah.
giving to
Right.
something that's hypothetically going to happen. And at the same time, you're losing all the stuff that really is happening in your life right
True.
now.
And wouldn't it be better to, I mean, if you're going to spend time preparing and it can fit inside your normal schedule, wouldn't it be better to spend that time maybe brushing up on some kind of skill
Survival skills,
yeah, or learning better fear and anxiety techniques, which I'd
absolutely.
like to get to in the second segment here. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and
Okay.
we'll be right back.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma. And it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system. And Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as the Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's alabamareiki.com.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415.
Thank you.
And we're back, and we're back with Rachel, Rachel Angel, and she is a counselor, and she is just amazing to talk to. And we've been talking tonight about fear, and well, we've been talking about a lot of interesting things, but our topic tonight is fear, and how the faces of fear have been changing. Some things stay the same, some things change with fear, but there's so much fear out there, and we're talking about positive ways to deal with it, to stay mentally and physically healthy. And we're talking now about we've been talking about some of the fears that are seen. We didn't get past the first level.
Well, no,
of survival,
I mean, we were talking over the break. You know, we mentioned that you said you only got to one fear, but you know, I think our listeners, I think I think they're going through some of that too. I mean, you know, I mean, we do reach a pretty broad audience, but I will say though, I get people, you know, telling me that they do worry about stuff like that, and we were talking over the break about the, you know. The world ending. Well, the world's always been ending, and it constantly. In fact, it's
well, it's going to be 2012.
Well, it was supposed to end a couple months ago, and it didn't. And you know, we're still here. And there was a Mayan. You know, so much is made about the Mayan stuff. I just want to add this. There was a Mayan elder that was talking to an author that I was listening to one time, and he said, "Well, you know, December 22nd, 2012, I'm going to get up, make coffee, and watch TV." And I'll do that the next day and the next day. And so, you know, I mean, that's the bottom line is we'll probably still be here. So
The odds are good. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. And we have a lot of stuff, though, in our world that is very fearful. Some of it is definitely to be feared. But, you know, we talked a little bit in the first segment about identifying some of that. And in the second segment, I wanted to kind of get into some practical, you know, sort of in the bunker tools to deal with these kind of fears, regardless of the source. I mean, I guess the source matters some.
Well,
but
I think too, you know, it depends on the source in a way, because there is a lot of fear out there that is just plain manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not getting into the politics again. It's not that. It's just that, you know, we've got so much news all the time. And I'm not going to get going on that, because I know Rachel's going to probably mention the news and some suggestions about what we should do with the news.
Probably turning
like,
it
turn
off.
Turn it off. But you know, seriously. So yeah, we wanted to talk about.
What are some things that you could recommend to our listeners to
when they start feeling that feeling of
yeah, being that little
just terrified or overwhelmed or.
Well, I think. Honestly, what people, the first response people tend to do, and they also do this with their kids, which I can't run away from enough, is they tend to say, this is ridiculous. I shouldn't feel this way.
Yes.
And they automatically hit themselves with a big dose of guilt. And it doesn't make the fear go away, because the next time you feel it, you just feel guiltier, because you shouldn't. And if there's one word I'd like to strike out of the English lexicon, it would be should.
Yes.
Because it's just, you feel what you feel, and that's okay. So if you see the tsunami coverage or the famine coverage or the war coverage or the debt crisis coverage, it's okay to acknowledge, you know, wow, that's really scary. And if that happened to me, I would be really scared.
Yes.
It's also okay to step back and say, you know, for my family, maybe I feel like I need to stockpile, you know, 2 or 3 months worth of food and rotate it out and you know, have stuff that we really eat in our pantry, so that if something happened and I needed it, then I could have it.
So something that you're actually
going to. Things to do.
It's something that you're actually going to like to eat and not,
yes.
You know,
eating. Yes. Yeah. I mean, please don't go buy, you know, 3 months worth of hot sauce, because it's not going to do you any good then or now. I mean, unless you like really like hot sauce.
Yeah.
Well,
but I think the first thing in any fear is acknowledging the fear. When I was a little kid, I was really scared of the dark, definitely afraid of the dark. And I had parents that were the type, and this is some of this is personality as well. And I just want to mention that, because I think there's some people who are like, well, just stop being afraid. And some people can. They really can just say, that's ridiculous, stop being afraid.
And that's
but I think for most of us, we have to go through a little bit more of a process to get there. And I was scared of the doctor as a child, and I had parents who just said, well, don't be scared. There's nothing wrong. And see you in the morning. Well, it didn't do anything to allay my fears. If anything, I was more afraid. Until the day I went to college, and I went off to college, to a little private college, and I had three roommates. And I was an only child at that point. All my brothers and sisters are much older. Everybody had left home. And so all this time I'd been alone in my room with the light off, terrified, because I knew I couldn't turn on the light because my parents would, you know, lay the guilt trip on me and shame me. So here I am, and I'm 17, sitting in a dorm room with three other girls. And I realize that the lights are off, and they're all asleep. And I went, oh, there are people who can sleep in the dark and not be afraid.
Oh, right.
And it was the first time I ever thought about, why am I afraid of the dark? Not, it is horrible, and I am terrible if I'm afraid of the dark, and I'm too old for this. But I started thinking through it, like, I'm afraid of the dark. So name your fear. I'm scared that there's going to be a hurricane here that's going to wipe out, you know, the state. It's happened before.
Oh.
And you can name the fear. I'm afraid that my husband's going to lose his job and we're not going to have enough food to eat.
Right.
But you've got to move beyond that step. That's where most people get stuck. They just, it's like a big ball of dough in the pit of their stomach. You know, when you go to the fair and you eat like 12 funnel cakes and then at the end of the night you just feel sick. Like, you wish you hadn't done that. That's how fear, I mean, after a while it just like sits there and it won't go down and nothing happens to it. It just gets worse and worse and worse. And then you start beating yourself up. Oh, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Just say, here's how I feel. And then move to the next step. Allow yourself to say, what do I do about it? If
yes.
it's a logical fear, there will be something you can do. If it's not a logical fear, then you have to choose right then. Do I keep feeding this or do I let it go? So, like, do I have any control over what anybody does in Washington? Nope. So,
don't seem to either. So.
Sorry.
I'm said they don't seem to either. No, so if they don't, how would we, right?
No, and some people would say I could write a letter to my congressman. Yes, you could. But as far as going up and like saying, hey, I've come up with a deal to balance the budget. Here's my plan. Neither one of us are going to be able to do that. So
sure.
At some point we have to, unfortunately, or fortunately, if you're as bad at math as I am. So, you know, at some point you have to just say, I can't fix this. Now I have to choose what I do about it. And for me, what I do is I turn off the TV.
Yeah.
I don't read the articles because there's nothing I can do except do the best I can at saving money so that if, you know, all hell breaks loose, God forbid, all hell breaks loose in the government, maybe I'll have a little bit of extra so that I'm okay. You know, that's all I can do.
You know, that makes me think of a question. So I hear people say this all the time, yet you'll find the same people reading pages and pages of comments or watching more news. And it's like the train wreck that you can't take your eyes off of. Why does
right.
that happen? I mean,
what
why
was the question? I'm sorry.
Why do so many people, you know, see that, geez, this is making me feel miserable. I'm so upset when I read this. I can't take my eyes off of it.
Well, I think some of it is our fear of missing something.
Oh.
You know, some clue or something we should have known about, and then that way we could have stopped it.
Yes.
But I think the other part is we're so plugged in this society. We are so plugged in that it would be really hard to get away from it. I mean, I can go on Facebook and get bombarded with news from people, unless I learn how to hide those people that all they want to talk about is politics.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that is just sad. If I can log on to something where I want to talk about, you know, the flip-flops I bought, and somebody's using it for a political platform, you know, and right then I can't choose anymore because I've already been bombarded with that message. So
right.
We hear it all the time. And it's harder than you might think to unplug it. And I think you have to have really good, strong boundaries about it to say, I'm not going to listen to it, to X, Y, Z. And, you know, for me, it was enough to turn off. I just don't watch the evening news, and I don't read the politics section on MSNBC, you know. And those things were enough for me, you know. For some people, they might have to actually unplug until this is resolved.
Which could be never. And I mean realistically, if that stuff bothers you, then yeah, I mean it's not essential to life in any way. You're talking about when people get in a state of fear, regardless of what level of fear that is, regardless of what it is, I've caught myself doing it. You start to say, okay, I'm going to do something to alleviate that fear. You know, and I guess that's where the compulsion comes in, but. But let's say it's a broad fear, not like I'm afraid to go on escalators. Instead, I use that example again. But instead, it's a fear like, well, okay. Let's say it's a
now
fear.
I'm starting to wonder about you. Are you really afraid of escalators?
Yes. Actually, escalators. Well, the only thing I'm afraid about escalators is that I'm wondering, like, I've heard people say. Now, I don't have this fear, but I've heard people say, "What if it stops?"
Okay, then you'll walk.
It is a staircase.
Seriously.
You know, but I'm just pulling that example up.
We didn't think of that. We could walk off.
Well, I'm not too big on heights, so that's probably pretty.
But that is, you know, that brings up a good point, though.
Yeah, what I was.
We get so caught up in the fear of it, we don't think, oh, well, we could walk off the escalator.
But you said, Rachel, you know, you were saying that when you have a you know, you try to do something about it. Like, say you have a fear of running out of money. Well, then you really try to save. But I've noticed this, and I want to see if this is something that is just me or it happens actually, that when you work out of that fear, when you try to alleviate a fear like that, and you scramble around to try to make more money or save more money, it seems like when you come from that place, that fear place, that your efforts aren't really as good as if you came from it from a more calmer place. Do you see what I'm saying? Like the efforts behind what you're trying to do, it's kind of a self-defeating cycle.
I think the difference in what you said and what I meant was that when you just described that, you're back to survival again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's the scrambling and the worrying about it. And whereas what I said is you just do the best you can to budget.
I was talking about something that I had seen. I was just talking about in general when I think people.
No, I am too. Those two things. But see how close that mindset is together, and you can very easily go over that border of, well, I'm doing the best I can to budget. To, oh my God, I'm going to run out of money and be dead on the side of the road. So you have to choose where your mind goes there. You know?
It's so true. You know, when I'm on the way to, let's say I have an appointment at 9 o'clock, let's just say, I tell you what, on the way there, I used to think I need the light to change or I'm going to be late. I'm going to be late. I need the light to change. What if if these people don't move out of the way, then I'm going to be late. And then somewhere along the way, I realized, well, you know what? They're only one car ahead of me, and the light's going to change. And you know what? 99.9% of the time, I get there on time, and it doesn't matter. I mean, and you know what? The funny thing is, since I relaxed and stopped worrying about it and sat there and enjoyed myself, you know, looked around or whatever I chose to do during that time, I've never been late. I mean, any more different. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so all that worry was wasted.
And it sounds so simplistic to say, if you're short of money, that you just have to let go and trust. But I am living proof that if you just let go and trust, it always works out. Because, and again, we're back to personality. Some people can do this way easier than others. Some people will always be a struggle because it's not logical to just let go and let it happen. But if you can get yourself to that point, I mean, for the last 2 years that I was in grad school, I gave up my full-time job with benefits, and I'm a single parent, so I was taking a huge, huge, huge risk from making a really good living to being an hourly worker. But you know what? Every single month, it would not work on paper, and every single month I've been okay. And not only okay, but like some of the biggest, most joyous blessings of my life have happened in the 2 years that I didn't have any money on paper. Mm-hmm. And if I had chosen to keep going there, and sometimes I did, and I would drive my friends crazy because poor Ruthann has been on the brunt of it more than once. Like, but you know what? Then, like, the very next day, I get a check in the mail.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. It always seems to.
Yes.
Yeah, it always does seem to work out. And I mean, yes. Maybe not the way you intended or thought or whatever. And
exactly.
You know, I was talking earlier about doing something to alleviate the fear. In terms of coming from that mindset of you know, when you try to alleviate a fear and you're doing it in a panic mode, like Ruthann said, like, you know, she was behind the car and,
I'm going to be late.
Like the stuff you're doing and that you're doing it from that fear mindset. It's a very, counterproductive mindset to come from anyway.
Well, so you're in fight or flight. I mean, you are in a fight or flight and you're telling your body, this is a stress, and your body is constantly on high alert.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And that's not good for you health-wise, let alone the fact that it almost never works out when you freak out about stuff anyway.
Right.
And, you know, the decision that I might make, let's say the light is yellow and I'm in panic mode, afraid to not get to my appointment by 9 o'clock, I choose to go through the light. Well, what... You know, I might get hit by the cars coming toward me and never get to the appointment. So I had to just say to myself, you know what? I'm going to get there if it's 2 minutes after. And then I realized, well, you know what? I have a cell phone, and if I'm going to be 5 minutes late, I can tell someone. So really, it doesn't matter that much, you know. And I'm not going to get there fast.
And there's a lot of those kind of, sorry.
No, go ahead.
There's a lot of those kind of fears I was going to say, Ruthann, that honestly, asking yourself what's the worst that can happen can make you back off of it a little bit, because there are some fears that are very big and very real, and I would never denigrate anybody who has lost their job and doesn't know where their next meal is coming from, or lives in a high crime area and is scared their kid's going to be, you know, shot. Or I mean, I would never say that that's not a real valid fear, or that it's so easy to get out of it. But I think for the most part, the fears that we really have in our life are the kind that we need to say, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Because the worst that can happen if you're late is you have to apologize to the client for being late.
Right.
You know, I mean, that is not something to get all worked up about.
Well, chances are that client was late anyway themselves.
It usually works that
way. Yeah, it seems to, you know.
And there have been a couple of times, even more in the bigger picture type view, where I have had to sit at that light and then come across a huge wreck that I probably could have been into.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think,
done that on more than one occasion.
You know,
yep,
so.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in things happening when they're supposed to.
Yes.
And even though it frustrates me all the time because things don't work on my timetable, I've learned that it's usually much better when it doesn't work on my timetable.
Right.
So I think that going back to the whole debt situation and stuff, you know, if you can say to yourself, I will do the best that I can. I really don't have control over this to the point that I want to, and I have to choose to let it go. And then you really do choose to let it go and live your life, because things are going to keep happening. You have this crisis and you get over it, there's going to be another one. There's one every day somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my grandmother, you know, she's on Social Security, and she's been watching the debt crisis and whatnot. Well, I mean, you know, she's retired and
sure.
Watches a lot of TV and it's very toxic in a lot of ways, but, so, you know, and she, you know, she didn't directly say it, but I kind of have the inkling that she's not sending in a rent check until tomorrow or Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, say, hey, is my Social Security check going to be there? And I mean, but on one hand, see, that deals with a fear of having a place to live, having shelter, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
on
the other hand, it's brought about by this fear quagmire in the press. So How does, you know, I mean, we could say her fear's unfounded, but then...
But it kind of isn't
unfounded. But if you watch the news that much, you could say it was
so
founded.
So that's one of those times I was talking about when, you know, some of it is, you know, the fact is they really don't know what's going to happen either on most levels. And so her fear, I mean...
Well, Rachel, what do you think about that kind of situation?
Well, I think it is a very valid fear that someone, and my mom is in that boat as well. She is retired and she's living on Social Security. But, you know, my mom is also of the mindset that it's always going to work out. And she just flabbergasts me. I mean, because I'm more worried about it than she is. And she's like, honey, it's happened before. I'm not going to worry about it. And yeah. I think the thing is, until it comes to that point, you get to choose. And we're not at that point yet.
That's true.
And when you look back on history, there's a very real track record of these things happening, a lot of media being given to it, and then always at the last minute, it's fine. Yes. And, you know, even if it's not fine, right now we don't know what it's going to be.
Right.
So you get to choose how to feel about it until you know. And right. It where it crosses the line into, you know, and you could say, well, that's survival. Yes, it is. But if your grandma needed to, she could come and stay with you. She could come and stay with Ruthanne. She would not be on the street. She would not be homeless.
Right.
You know, there are things, and that's probably where my mind would go if I was in that situation. Well, what can I do about this?
Right,
you
yeah.
know? And that's all you can really do. What else can you possibly do?
And, you know, there's another reality with that, too. Even if, excuse me, even if it happened to where she couldn't pay it, she would not anywhere near be the only person who couldn't. And
right.
It's not going to, I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's not going to be, there are millions of people all turned out at
yeah,
once.
Yeah, her,
I mean,
her
seriously.
And her and half of her,
the whole complex would be empty.
Half of the complex would be in trouble. Yeah, exactly. So
realistically,
it's, not, right.
it's, you know.
Well, you know, here's another thing, too. You know, currencies have crashed before. I believe it was Argentina in the 80s had a complete meltdown of their currency. And guess what? Argentina is still a country. They still live there. They're still eating. I guess it all work out. I mean, probably will.
Yeah. Now, what I wanted to ask too, I know that, you know, you've been around a lot of the teenagers and kids and I just didn't want to miss an opportunity to ask, you know, what you're seeing in them related to the intense media coverage of every shooting, every disaster, everything. I mean,
every
from when
case
we were that... younger. Yes, every court,
I mean, it's
everything.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
What are you seeing? You know, are they reacting a lot differently than we did as kids? Where, you know, what's going on with them, basically, is what I wanted to...
You know, absolutely fascinating, because I gave fifth grade girls this experiment art project, which basically is asking them, you give them a piece of paper and you say, I want you to draw a world, imagine a world, it doesn't have to be realistic, but something that you feel very safe and at peace and calm, a world that you would like to create. And then you just sit back and watch for 15 minutes while they go to town. And more than ever, I mean, in overwhelming numbers, they said things like, we're safe, we're peaceful, there's no war. Nobody said anything about tsunamis or earthquakes or famine or debt, but it was the feeling of being safe and the feeling of being happy. And I think they are very much internalizing our stress and our anxiety level. They're not getting the news from the source. They're getting it indirectly through us. So they're either listening to what we have to say about it, or they're just soaking in our vibes about, oh, mom's always stressed about money or whatever. Something must be going wrong.
But yeah, they don't watch the news as much. I mean,
no.
not what I've
not
seen.
Not the same way we do.
And maybe that's, and you know, people say that that's a bad thing, but actually I'm starting to think maybe it's a good thing in a way.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know,
I would keep my kid from that as long as I could.
Right. Well, I mean, I know I have 2 7-year-olds, and the only thing they watch is the Weather Channel when they're not talking about the disasters, and the kids' shows that are appropriate. And really, if you talked about most topics today, they have no clue, and it's good.
I would definitely want to make sure that just given the negativity in the press now, it's better that kids don't, I think, in a lot
right.
of ways.
I know a lot of kids are different than my young kids now because they have older brothers and sisters and they hear it. So really, we can't shield them,
right.
but.
We're about out of time for this show, and we've had such a good time with the interview here and had so much information that we're actually going to run a little bit late. Now, on BBS Radio, we have this 1 hour slot, but we're going to include a little bit extra on this conversation about kids, and because we wanted to touch on that, something
yes.
we didn't. But before we go, Rachel, you have a website?
It's at nowhitechargers.com, and it's just basically my premise of, being raised as a girl believing that there would always be a prince on a white charger coming to rescue me, and it's sort of my way of working through that. And I have a lot of counseling stuff on there and some cooking and some stuff about my life. And
wonderful
I'm
stuff.
Always happy to talk about any questions people have about that as well.
Okay, well, definitely. We'll link to that. And
thanks so much.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's it for tonight. I just want to let our listeners know that, as always, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Well-Rounded Corners. We'll see you back live in 2 weeks, Tuesday. And remember, there's going to be a little extra for this interview. You can catch it on our website, wellroundedcorners.com.